The Hard Shoulder.
With Nissan. Number one for petrol in Ireland. Number one for electric. Nissan. Innovation that excites.
This is News Talk.
Well, for political anoraks like me, what's happening in British politics is absolutely fascinating. As the Brexit theatre, aside the fact that we see it from the point of view of our neighbour burning their house down in self-harm, it is really interesting how this spasm is working its way through the system as people are really frustrated with Corbyn and May. And who better to talk to than one of the most preeminent experts on British politics, the history of politics, the sophology of it, from an impartial perspective. I'm talking about the Professor of Politics at the University of Strathclyde, Sir John Curtis. Thank you for joining us indeed, John, on the programme. What's happening?
Well, indeed, what's happening? That indeed is what we all of us would like to know. Well, certainly, this past week has been one of the most dramatic weeks in British domestic politics, in that for the first time we've seen the formation of a new political grouping. It's not yet a party, it's just a group of MPs, but a grouping that's been formed by a simultaneous split in both the Labour and the Conservative parties. You may remember back in 1981, Roy Jenkins and his fellow colleagues formed the
Gang of Four, the SDP.
But that was a breakaway from the Labour Party and only ever picked up one Conservative MP. Now, Europe was part of the issue there, but in the end, this was simply a breakaway from Labour. What we've now got is a simultaneous break in both Conservative and Labour. And in a sense, it's but the latest manifestation of the way in which the various debates we've had about Brexit and what it should mean and whether we should accept the deal or not, and if so, and if not, or if not, on what terms. That has already been something that's seen MPs regularly breaking the party line. And indeed, the people who've joined this grouping from both the Conservative and Labour parties, people like Anna Subi from the Conservatives, Chukwuemeka from Labour, they have been working together with each other on Brexit, because these are amongst the most pro-Remain, anti-Brexit MPs inside the House of Commons. They've been voting together to try to achieve that objective. They've now become so disenchanted with their parties, in the case of Anna Soubry, because of the concern that the government is still potentially heading towards no deal. In the case of Chukwuemeka and his Labour colleagues, because they are disappointed that the Labour Party has not grasped the idea of having a second EU referendum. Because of that, they've now finally had enough and they have left.
Okay, now, and could I just ask you that? As Brexit plays out, let it be a soft Brexit, let it be a rock-hard Brexit, is there the basis, given, we'll just say 48-49% of the people want to remain, is there the basis of a political party that is remain even after Brexit?
Yes, there is. Not least because I don't think Brexit is going to resolve itself anytime soon. Let's just remember, should the UK eventually, but at some point between now and March the 29th, manage to agree to the withdrawal treaty, that simply starts another 2 years at least of negotiations, in which many of the crucial questions about our relationship with the European Union will be resolved and have not yet even been touched upon. But also, in so much more broadly, what Brexit is about an argument about the nature of British society. Should it be a socially liberal society in which we embrace diversity, or should it be a more socially conservative one in which we're much more concerned about a degree of homogeneity to maintain social cohesion? That's what underlines our debate. It's what particularly debate about immigration is about. And immigration is certainly going to continue to be an argument within British politics. Then the truth is, I think certainly there is going to be space for such a party. Indeed, you have to bear in mind, we have always had a pro-European, socially liberal, relatively centrist party. It's called the Liberal Democrats. At one stage, they were quite powerful until they imploded and made the coalition. But one of the issues that's going to have to be sorted out relatively early by this new independent group is what its relationship with Liberal Democrats are going to be. Liberal Democrats already signaled that they recognize that it's not going to make sense for these two to compete with each other. So look forward to other possible developments, perhaps a rerun of the politics of the 1980s, whereby we discover that this new grouping ends up in some symbiotic relationship with the current Liberal Democrats, because that almost seems the inevitable direction which they have to go. But to that extent, at least, it's a continuation of an existing pattern of British politics, or a reinforcement and a recreation of an existing pattern. It's okay. Not a complete something completely new.
Okay. Under your electoral system of first past the post, if a new centre party came along, Liberal Democrats were, and even got 20% of the vote, it isn't enough to win an awful lot of seats. Therefore, some people argue that what's actually happening here will be of the benefit to one of the large parties. In other words, it will take from Labour, for example, if you're anti-Corbyn, and ensure that the Tories stay in power almost in perpetuity. But you could argue, if Europe split the Tory party, it might allow the Labour, you know, the left of centre, the right of centre vote to be split, so therefore the left of centre. Who of the big parties do you think this change might benefit most electorally?
Well, the challenge, both our two largest parties are frankly in deep trouble. Both our two largest parties are in danger of splitting, and both of our two largest parties have already to some degree suffered a split. And certainly one of the possible consequences of the fact that the three Conservative MPs came across to this group on Wednesday is that actually it might be able to appeal to former Conservative voters as well as Labour voters in a way that otherwise wouldn't have done. That said, there is no doubt that because inside the Labour Party, the sources of the breakup isn't just to do with Brexit, it's also to do with views about Jeremy Corbyn and being too left-wing, claims that the culture of the party is too bullying, and above all, the row about anti-Semitism, which cost the party another MP today, albeit this MP is not in favour of opposing Brexit and is not going to join this new group. But given that the party has got multiple sources of tension, it's the party that certainly is the more vulnerable. But of course, at the end of the day, it's not entirely true that a party with only 20% of the vote can't do well under electoral system. What is crucial is whether or not the vote can be geographically concentrated or not. The Liberal Democrats were only getting around 20% of the vote up to 2010, but they were still able to get around 60 seats because they'd managed to develop some local concentrations of strength. But certainly one of the difficulties about all of this is that there aren't that many concentrations of Remainer strength. They're primarily in London, which is where I suspect this grouping would do best. But certainly it's also going to have to start developing local appeals beyond its broader pro-Remain remit if it's actually going to turn votes into seats. And almost undoubtedly, it's again another reason why it's going to have to talk to the Liberal Democrats.
For people who in Ireland who dip in and out of British politics, and they see Corbyn, you know, even MacDonald, Shadow Chancellor, as quite sort of aged, and they see Theresa May, who's now agreed she won't lead them into the next election, and you see people like Chuck O'Uma, who is part of the new group. And I'm going to ask you an unfair question here, but it's who should we watch out for? Who is the next Tony Blair, the next Margaret Thatcher, the next Merkel, the next Obama? Who do you think might grab the zeitgeist of any party in Westminster go through this sort of internecine period?
Yeah, you do ask an absolutely fundamental question. Which is, where are the charismatic politicians in British politics? And the honest truth is that they have been thin on the ground for rather a long time, but particularly thin on the ground within our two largest parties. We're actually trying to think who have been some of the most charismatic British politicians. They have been, above all, Nigel Farage running UKIP. They were Alex Salmond running the SNP, and arguably also even George Galloway, who for a while was getting some success amongst the far left. The only politician, perhaps there are two politicians who at the moment, but I think one much more than the other, whom one would regard as having the kind of charisma that enables them to march for a broadly across the election. One is Boris Johnson, though Boris Johnson is often heavily criticized for other reasons, not least as somebody who's good at the rhetoric, but not necessarily so good at the homework.
He's the guy who said F business. I kind of scratched him off my list after he said that.
Well, sure. I mean, there is no doubt. I mean, I mean, particularly the way in which he was able to maintain his position of mayor of London, even when the Conservative Party wasn't that popular, was a demonstration of a quite extraordinary personal popularity. But the truth is that, I mean, Chukwuemeka is somebody who in 2015 was talked about as a possible Labour leader. And yes, you know, certainly somebody to watch out for. But the truth is, at the moment, I don't think there is anybody there inside the Conservative parties whom one would say, you know what, here is another Tony Blair. Here is another.
What about Savage Javid, the Home Secretary?
To be honest, I mean, in a personal position, I doubt if he's going to succeed to get himself in that position. And I think all the, some people would argue he's certainly running into quite a storm with his handling of the lady whose British citizenship he has rescinded. Something that, by the way, that potentially has implications for any British citizen who might have an Irish parent or grandparent, because I think according to the rule that the Home Secretary has enunciated, anybody who is a British citizen who is capable or who is potentially eligible for the citizenship of another country, who then goes away and does something that we declare not to be commensurate with the public safety, could now be denied their British citizenship. And that must anybody who is potentially...
Yeah, no, I'm not peddling his... Now, for me, the only adult in the room at the moment is John Bercow. He's the one who's trying to use Westminster. Look, I could speak to you forever. I'm fascinated by this, but what I'm picking up from Sir John Curtis in relation to that last question, the Professor of Politics at University in Rathclyde, is, Ivan, it's wrong to give hope where there is no hope. Right. Thank you very much indeed, John, as always.